Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmadbhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi everybody and welcome to part two of this two-part exclusive with homeopath Colin Griffith. Last week in part one, which was episode 72, I spoke to Colin about homeopathy and its connection to astrology, and we also covered some of the remedies found in his new book, which is the New Materia Medica, Volume 3. Three of the remedies that we covered actually were Australian Sandstone, Blackbird Song and Ferrum Metallicum. And it truly was a fascinating conversation. So this is part two of this two-part exclusive, and the conversation continues from the previous episode. Colin, I was going to ask you that when I read some of the descriptions of the remedies, part one of this podcast, I pointed towards the foreword. There's a great deal of substance, and it's very tangible, the remedies, and you've brought them to life, especially with the examples of where you yourself have used those remedies with success. And I think that goes a long way to giving life to the remedies. And I think it's so, so important, isn't it, nowadays? Because we're literally bombarded with different types of repertories and materia medica. And it's a heavy reading sometimes. Yes. And I find it quite refreshing to read the remedy descriptions and the pictures and the background and history and the subsequent provings and then, you know, the clinical experience. I think, you know, that's very, I'd thank you for that. Actually, I'd say, you know, I mean, I think that's really gives it, makes the remedy come to life in front of you, and you can feel it and you can see it almost.
Right. And I think what you're saying touches on something that's very important for the learning, the study of homeopathy, which is that, we have textbooks, materia medicas, repertories, and we're obliged, I think, to depend on them. Indeed, I don't think it's possible to study homeopathy without starting with them. But there's a problem, because the repertories and the materia medica, which are supposed to be compatible, they're supposed to harmonize with each other, they don't. And a very good example, I was thinking of a good example as well, of sepia. There is a lot in sepia which simply does not appear in the materia medica, the average materia medica, even in the great Murphy materia medicas. It doesn't appear in there. And yet you look through the repertory and you find, oh, there's sepia in there. I didn't know that sepia covered that. And so the truth is that the repertory and the materia medica become the breakwater upon which the barnacles of learning homeopathy are stuck. But swirling all around this breakwater with the barnacles is a teeming sea of all sorts of things which we have to take account of. And so when I was writing these materia medicas and also the repertory, I became very aware of how inadequate and how difficult they are to use accurately. And yet that's what we have. That's all we have. It was also borne in on me how even Robin Murphy's extraordinary work has its faults, because in many cases, I mean, in later editions, he clears it all up. But the first editions of his repertory, they're simply copied wholesale from previous writers, and very badly edited. There's lots of repetition. It doesn't really matter, because actually it's all the same. It's just written in an easier style to read. But there is so much room for every individual homeopath, and it is every individual, to do their own research into remedies beyond the materia medica and beyond the repertory, because in that way they can get a much fuller expression of what the patient is presenting. And I have often used Allen's Encyclopedia of Provings to go in search of something that I feel is missing from the materia medicas of classical remedies. And, well, as like as not, I'll find something. Oh, that's not in the rule. That's been left out. Who's done the leaving out? People who've had experience of a remedy, they write down what their experience is, but it may not be yours or mine. So we always have to keep an open mind as to the information in front of us on a page. What we have to do when we are meeting a patient is always keep open ears, because they don't read the book. They just tell us how it is. And it is extraordinary how many people will give us a very good demonstration of a sepia or a pulsatilla or some great remedy. No problem. Just give them a remedy. 10. And they come back and it does nothing, because one's failed to see that a part of their picture didn't fit in to the whole of the beautiful portrait of the remedy you thought you saw. And so our practice may wonderfully be occasionally a patient who comes in, sits down, and presents us with this, what we might call a Kentian picture. No problem. This is a Natmir. Take Natmir at 1 a.m. and they go away and they come back and they're so much better. Great. Doesn't happen very often, especially with Natmir. A lot of us fool ourselves that these remedies do more than they actually do. And I think that was born in on me very, very, very early on, because like every other student, I would listen to a lecture given to us for the first time. And, oh my God, that sounds like me. So I'd go along to Ainsworth's and I'd buy it and I'd take it, and nothing happened. Nothing. Exasperating. And eventually I realized I couldn't treat myself. I needed a homeopath. And when I saw my homeopath, I had the most extraordinary experience. She gave me a remedy and I went away, and I had a dream that night of being in a coffin, dead, looking at myself in the coffin. Around me was like a hangar, an aircraft hangar, with black walls and horrible tar-like stuff, molten tar, falling down the walls. And I was under the spotlight in my coffin with 6 black angels. I am not given to dreams like this. Seriously, I'm not that kind of dreamer. However, it was my dream. So I went back to Janice and I said, you gave me a remedy that made me dream. And I said, you gave me radium bromide. And she nodded, because that's what she does. And I thought, how could she possibly know that I needed radium bromide? That dream is absolutely nowhere to be found in a repertory. It's unique. Blackness is a sign of radiation, poisoning. Fair enough. But black angels and horrible tar? No. Anyway, what was so interesting to me is 2 things about this. One is that I recognized, without knowing, I recognized it was radium bromide. And 2 is that Janice used to be a radiographer in hospitals. So she's very familiar with radiation poisoning, whereas the rest of us aren't. She's actually able to see it, which is, you know, on paper, that sounds ridiculous, but she is able to see it. And it opened up the healing of my life completely. In addition, when I asked her, well, what else made you give it to me? She said, well, you go swimming off the south coast of England, don't you? I said, yes, I do. I live near a place called Dungeness, which has a power station. I've swum there for 70 years, literally. And she said, well, that's enough, isn't it? Because Dungeness power station was known to be leaking radiation for years. So that has nothing to do with the fact that people who've spoken to me say, oh, you're a typical Nux vomicum. Oh, you're a typical lycopodium. Oh, you're a typical arsenicum. I've had all three thrown at me, and they're all correct for various reasons. But it was radium bromide that made that much difference and opened out the healing journey that I feel I've been on ever since. Not in the Materia Medica, not in the repertory. It was in the intuitive experience of the person who was treating me.
Which leads me on to two questions, actually. The importance of dreams in analyzing a patient.
Yeah.
We're presented with patients who come nowadays and they say, oh, I keep having repeated dreams about such and such, or I always dream about this or that. That's one part. And the other part is the intuition part. I suppose that's probably one of the easier ones than the first one, that it's intuition is something that happens over time. You can't just go into intuition. Am I correct? Or is it something that requires many years of observing patients? And
oh, your question is so good. And there's lots of answers to it. But one of my first answers is intuition has always been there. You're born with it. So a lot of the time, and I will put myself in this place, a lot of the time is how easy do you find it to dispense with fear of using your intuition? Because modern education, and I'm not talking about the education you get in state schools, I'm talking about modern education as we've had it since probably early 19th century. It's all been about inculcation of norms. It's about how to do things, how to be, and what you need to know. And a lot of it is geared to success, to money, to prestige, personal power. And intuition has no interest in any of that at all. So it's how do we put down all the norms in order to allow our intuitive machinery to flower? I mean, that's a strange mixture of metaphors, but you get my point, that we all have intuition, but how much do each of us allow it to work? I've come across people, I saw somebody day before yesterday who told me that they were writing something for a university. And I forget all the details and it really doesn't matter, but the point was that they'd been given instructions not to do anything intuitively. They had to do it by the book and they had to reference everything. And I said, how did you do that? She said, well, I didn't. I winged it and I faked it. And I said, are you happy about that? She said, I couldn't care less because I think they're wrong. And her directness about what she was saying was like a splash of cold water. I thought, yes, I like hearing this because here's someone who's not afraid of using their intuition, because intuition, we're born with it. It is a balancing influence to all the ego stuff. And the ego stuff is so fed by modern education and so trained and so trapped by it. And the intuitive stuff, it doesn't seem to have much of a look in. But in homeopathy, you cannot treat people satisfactorily. Here is a black and white. Lots of people will probably really tap their feet in irritation at it. But my belief is that we can't practice homeopathy unless we do employ intuition, because homeopathy is so intuitive. And the tools we have at our disposal, repertories and materia medica, they're inadequate. How do we make up the shortfall?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UK Radio to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
I also think that intuition can be fed. It can be fed by excellent parenting. It can be fed by the spirit of adventure. It can be fed by the tubercular myosin, which is why I have no fear of the tubercular myosin, because the tubercular myosin is about adventure. It's about expanding your horizons. The problem with the tubercular myosin, it comes when you break down those horizons before you've sorted out what you're standing on. Mm. I don't like this. I'm going. Well, that's fine. But whenever you go, you're going to find you're standing on the same place and you still got to do the work. But if you have done the work, if you've done that soric stuff, You can step over your boundaries and explore. And that is going to feed your intuition like nothing else. So sorry about the long answer, but I think your question is extremely relevant. And I think it's something that should be asked of everybody who starts studying homeopathy.
I wanted to share with you, you and everybody else listening, I suppose. But I've always found that many a time, I'm seeing a patient and I repertorize, not every time, but for these examples, certainly, I'll repertorize and, indicated remedies will come up as a totality or weighted or whatever it is, as far as analysis. And there's a part of me that always says, it's not that. And I'll then proceed to look through various MMs, Clark, Murphy, and others. No name dropping, but the ones that we generally access, Boyericke and so forth. And still it's like, it's not that. And I always go with my intuition, which whatever that is, I don't know at that time what it is. Now, there were days when in the past where I would think, no, you don't know what you're thinking. It's not that. You've got to go by the process, which is repertorize, get to the simulimum if you can, or just whatever it is, right? Whatever process it is. But now I find myself very much leaning on that, and I'm very, and we use this word several times now, but I'm very content, honestly, when I say, it's not a CPO, or that's not arsenicum, I don't agree with that, and I'll go with whatever I think it is. And, the results are fine. Everyone, the results are as they should be. Yeah. Patient improves, right? And that's the result. So it's quite interesting. I've always been fascinated by this, that intuition part, because there's also an element of fear, because sometimes your mind plays tricks and you start self-doubting and you think, who am I? How do I know this? Why do I know this? Am I mad? Do I think my ego's too big? And I know this, that this patient is a next vomica, when they're certainly not, when there's something totally different, because the repertory says it's platinum met or something. And you go through the periodic table even, and you did different tools that we all have. But I found that intuition is so key. And sometimes it's like going into the shop, isn't it, Colin, when you want to buy something and there's 50 different types of something that you want to buy. But yep. The first one you look at is the one that you know is the right one, but you proceed still to look at the other 49, even though you know it's that one, and you still go back to it.
Yes.
And intuition is very much like that, isn't it? Because you know the remedy, and then you'll go through the 49 others which aren't applicable, yes. And you still end up saying, well, no, it's got to be that one. I'm going to give that.
Yes.
Lengthy exercise, right? But interesting.
Very. Yeah. Yeah, you remind me of a time when I was treating a small boy, and I it was so clear that he needed tuberculinum. It was just everything on the page, everything about him was clearly tuberculinum. Even the nosebleeds. Anyway, so in those days, I didn't have a big pharmacy. I just had the box of 300, 400 remedies. I put my hand in the box and I knew where it was, and I put it in the packet and I sent the mother away with the little boy. And as they were driving away, I thought, ooh, something wrong. I went back to the box and I'd left the remedy out of the box. And it was Thuya. I'd given him, so to speak, the wrong remedy.
Hmm.
And I thought I could get in my car and chase after this woman. Aha, you've got the wrong remedy. And I didn't. There's something very naughty about me, which thought, actually, I'd quite like to see what happens.
Okay.
And then life, went on that day, and my kids came home from school and I forgot about it. Well, she came back and she said the child was absolutely amazing. She couldn't have expected a better result. And what was the remedy? Because she thought homeopathy was wonderful. So, was that intuition, or was it just a plain mistake, or did it matter? The point is that the patient and the practitioner together are making an energy. And if the intentions are right on both sides, another example would be, Janice told me the story. I hope she won't mind me spoiling her stories, but she told me that she'd seen a patient who told her a long story, and she wrote all the things down. And in the margin, she kept on writing lycopodium, lycopodium, lycopodium. And so she was prepared to give this man lycopodium 1M10. And at the very end, her intuition said, do not give him lycopodium. So she stopped, knowing her intuition well. She's been a practitioner for 45 years.
Hmm.
So she stopped and she thought, okay, what's coming next? And then her intuition said, give him mercury 10M. So she did. And he went back. He went away and he came back 6 weeks later. And he sat down, and before she had a chance to say anything, he said to her, Janice, I'm so sorry. Everything I told you last time was a lie. And we know what mercury does.
That is, that's the power of homeopathy, but that's the power of intuition, isn't it?
It's the power of intuition.
That's definitely amazing. That really is. And it goes such a long way to giving life to, when we say, the art, Kent, in his book, Philosophy, talks about separating, the science and the art. And generally, we talk about the art of homeopathy, and we all have the same palette of colors and the paintbrushes, yep, and the canvas, but yep, how we paint that portrait is so unique to us. And you said something very important. It's about the intuition of yourself, of the practitioner and the patient, and that relationship. I feel very strongly with what you said, because I'm a great believer in this, that if your intention is clean and your heart is pure for the sake of your patient to help them, then you can give, you're always going to give the right remedy. You know, you always are, because they're receptive and you've got this automatic connection, this energetic link.
Yeah.
And everything good flows, right? Everything good. If the intention is good, then of course you're going to have the right remedies come to you. I can't put it into substance like that, but it's something to experience is what I can say.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all a flowing experience. You said earlier about flowing, how any therapy actually should be a flowing thing, very plastic, very malleable. And it's something that I often say when I do my lecturing, that we need to apply homeopathy to the patient, not the patient to homeopathy. And it's slightly cliche, but it's very true, because if we apply the patient to homeopathy, we trap him. If we allow homeopathy to be very plastic and invest it with intuition, then actually the patient is in a much better place. Because yes, we can be wrong. We can make mistakes. But in homeopathy, I don't believe there are any mistakes unless they're through neglect, through being negligible. You know, one dose of a remedy is not going to create great harm. We have a whole system of antidoting, not always very successful. But anyway, one dose of something is not going to make the problem. So for me, this fluidity and malleability is fed by intuition.
But on the other side, what's also important is that it's positive and proactive education for the patient, because they get to actually know themselves. You know, we always have this, who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? And this is where homeopathy can also help, because it's a journey, as we've spoken about. And it's very much about the patient then becoming very aware and empowered, that it's not just a tablet I have to take three times a day for whatever extended period of time, but it might be one dose, it might be 10, whatever it is, but then eventually it might change and it might move into a different area.
Yes.
That I found is really helping patients, because they understand their body, they understand the mechanisms, and most importantly, they understand that in a majority of cases, certainly that I'm seeing personally, personal experiences, they understand the state of the mind. And, oh, it was because I went through this, or I'm going through it, that I have this. I was speaking to somebody recently who was asking help, and he had problems with leukemia and lymphoditis and so on and so forth. And it was creating havoc. And I asked him if he was around toxic people, and he just stopped talking. And he said, and I thought, okay, he's either going to shout at me, he's going to say, why are you asking me such a ridiculous question? And he said, you know what? I have been, yes, not now. But I was, because at that time, personally, I mean, every homeopath's different. But when he said what he said to me with the symptoms, I thought, that's toxicity, which means it's toxic people he's been around, and it's now manifesting physically, and it's almost uncontrollable.
Yes,
and that wasn't because I'm clever or I know anything, but it was just from an intuitive point of view, but also from the indications, where you have to certainly look outside the box. Sometimes you need a third person perspective, don't you?
Definitely.
You know,
definitely.
Rather than compartmentalize and say, okay, let me think, is this Nux? Is this arsenicum? Is this belladonna? What is it? It's not. Just let the patient complete what they want to say, and then it should come to you, right?
Yes, absolutely. Exactly so. That happened to me yesterday. I saw a very, very experienced homeopath. A very good homeopath came to see me, and I think, yeah, if I were honest, I would say I would be struggling a bit. However, what happened was that suddenly I thought, I can't do this way anymore. I can't do the typical thing that I have to do as a homeopath. So I put it all down. I even put my pen down. And I just shut my mind off. I just was quiet in my head. And at that moment, for this very, very calc carby patient, phosphorus came into my mind. And I knew intuitively I had to give phosphorus 1M. So I said, look, I'm sorry, I haven't been entirely with it for the last few moments, but I consider that you need phosphorus. She sat bolt upright. Ooh, and looked quite pleased. And it was very interesting because she said that she'd almost been on the point of asking to see Janice, my homeopath, who works very intuitively, because she said, oh, I wanted a bit of this intuitive stuff. Now, I'd said to her, this is a very intuitive prescription. Is that okay with you? Oh, yes. So she's actually gone away feeling very, I don't know what the results are, but she's gone away feeling happy and content that someone's gone out inside the box when we were stuck.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? So I've learned to be comfortable with that. It takes time. I used to be so afraid of not doing things the right way. Honestly, we could all do only our own way.
I'll share something interesting with you. My uncle, who is a homeopath alongside my father, as you know, and he said to me, I was spending time with him in Nairobi with his clinic, shadowing him and so forth, learning from him. And he said to me something which I'll never forget. He said two things to me, actually. Later on, I'll give you the first one, the most recent remark. He said, keep your head down and do the best you can. And that's always stuck with me. But the first remark was, have you read all the books, the homeopathic ones, the ones that you're supposed to, let's say, if there are any that you are actually supposed to? That's another question, right? He said, okay, now throw them out the window. Not literally, but just forget that.
Yep.
And you go forward as you're supposed to go. And that's stuck with me as well. And I've listened to that advice and it's done me a world of good because now patients call up with, you know, we all have emergencies where someone calls up, oh, such and such has happened, or it's a nosebleed, or someone fell, or, a fever, cough, whatever, or something maybe more serious. And I don't have access because I'm outside. I'm either in the car or I'm at someone else's house or blah. And you just have to go with intuition at that time. You can't think, oh, hang on, let me try and remember the modalities for arsenicum and nux. Sometimes you just can't, right? No matter how well you're versed, it doesn't happen. Certainly it doesn't happen to me.
No.
But you just go with, it's carbo-veg. Can you give carbo-veg? And it's, well, what do I have to do? It's a 200C single dose, report back in half an hour.
Yeah.
And that's just one example, but it works, like you've said. And you just have to... You have to get rid of the fear, which means take a deep breath, calm down, and think of the patient, and the remedy will come to you if the intention is clean.
Yes. Yes.
Which requires some sort of effort to calm the adrenaline down, because sometimes you can get very hyper and you don't know what's going on because you get excited and et cetera. But it works, doesn't it, Colin? I mean, well, you're a prime example of that. Absolutely. You know, a leading example, I would say.
Well, the thing is that it costs effort. I mean, it takes time to get the confidence to be able to do things that are a bit maverick. Somebody once asked me to write a short 100-word description of a book I would recommend people to read, homeopaths to read. And I think I've slightly caused, it never got published, at least not that I'm aware of, caused a slight... taken a back look on the face of the person who asked me, because the choice was not a self-help book. It wasn't a homeopathy book. It was actually about man-eaters.
Okay.
And it's a book called Man-Eaters of Kumaon by Jim Corbett, who early in the 20th century made a reputation, not that he wanted a reputation, he wasn't like that, made a reputation for himself in the hills of Simla in northern India, where he lived a very, very quiet life with his sister as a retired army shot. He was a fantastic shot. I don't know if he was a sniper, but he was a soldier. Anyway, he got the reputation that he would be prepared to kill man-eating tigers to save the lives of people who were being attacked. And this book, I think it's about six stories of man-eaters, and they're all different. And I wanted people to read this. I still want people to read this book, because it's the story of a man who is completely Sauric. He is absolutely, totally clear in his mind that he is adequate for the task he sets himself. So when he is asked to go out and hunt these man-eaters, his preparation is impeccable. His strategies are absolutely as you'd expect them. I mean, you and I wouldn't think of these things, but he works with intuition because tigers are clever. And he also did leopards, and they're even cleverer. And he's in a terrifying situation, and he's able to do the job because he is sure that what he's doing is right for the occasion. He's a very simple man. He expects no accolades or anything. In fact, if you look up on Wikipedia, you can see a photograph of him with the man-eating leopard that he shot. It's huge. It's sort of 10 foot long. It's terrifying. And he did it totally in the dark. But when he gets to the sixth animal, the sixth one, he is hunting it, and he goes down a small ravine with rocks overhanging the ravine. And he knows, absolutely sure, he can't see it, but he knows that the tiger is on the rock above and will pounce on him as he goes through the ravine. He has the courage to do this. He actually has the skill to shoot the animal through the head as it pounces. It does, it leaps at him. But at the end of it, he knows, I can never do this again. He'd reached the capacity, and he knew that he couldn't do anymore because now he would be afraid. I thought it's such an interesting portrait of a man who has this Sauric certainty that he needs to be on this planet. And I think if we, if you like, copy him, if we emulate him with patience, we're not going to kill tigers, but we are going to listen to someone's story and strategize. Strategies are so important with remedies. Where are you going with this? If I give you, let's say, like yesterday, I gave someone Flaspi Bursa Pastoris 6C because she has terrible menstrual periods. My question to myself is, okay, where are you going to go with this? If this isn't the end of the story, what are you going to make of this? And I know that she's going to take me deeply into a hormonal picture, which is also her mother's. So in my mind, I'm strategizing, okay, do we need to draw upon the story of the mother and her periods? So suddenly, we're not just looking at the patient. We're looking at the patient in a context. And this business of context becomes hugely important, especially when we get stuck.
That's a very three-dimensional approach, or you could actually argue it's four-dimensional. You're, you know, analyzing the patient, you know, with everything that's surrounding them, and that includes linealogy as well, doesn't it?
And very much so.
That's fascinating indeed, and I think that's, you know, that's really where homeopathy is so exciting, because the possibilities are absolutely endless. I mean, when I picked up volume 3 of your book, when I received it, I did say that I was drawn immediately to rainwater, and I read through it, and I'm still drawn to it. Even now, the book is on my left. Obviously, this is a podcast, so you can't see, but the book is on my table. It's on the left, and I'm drawn to that remedy out of all the other 36. But then we spoke about Blackbird's Song, and then one thinks, how is that, you know, what is that? What's really going on? But once you do understand, and you start to acknowledge it and then appreciate it, it's incredible, isn't it? The power of homeopathy, and that actually everything can become homeopathic, dare I say it, you know, of use. And that's not something to, in the olden days, people might say, oh, no, you need psychiatric medicine. It's not that. It's actually when you dig deeper into creation and you look at the energy fields and you look at the universe and everything else, I don't think science is at that level where it can understand things, and certainly it can't understand a great many things. And homeopathy is certainly one of those where it cannot grasp the immense, you know, depth of homeopathy.
You've touched on an area here, which isn't homeopathy with a capital H. It's homeopathy with a little H. And you've touched on something that goes way beyond that. I don't know of another word except the one I'm going to use, but I'm very aware how kind of naff this word sounds, because it could be so easily become a kind of moral religion. But you've touched on the quality of light as opposed to dark, and every remedy that we use, or that's available, every remedy is a particular quality of light energy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I can even take that into the macro by thinking about, we've talked about Aquarius and Pisces, their constellations, of course, but we've also mentioned Uranus. One of the things that staggered me, why I don't know, it shouldn't have surprised me at all, was that when I looked up on Wikipedia, yes, I do use Wikipedia, it's good. When I looked up on there, the planets, the moon was the first one. Then I looked up Saturn, and I looked up Uranus, and I looked up Jupiter. They have on there, they have pictures of these planets, but they also have black and white drawings of the shape of the electrodynamic energy that is emitted from these planets. And they are all different. I found that electrifying because it helped me to understand that the emanating qualities of electrodynamic energy, which, okay, light in one of its forms, that's emanating from these planets, reaching us, because they are constantly, the ripples on the pond. Why shouldn't they be all influencing us in different ways? And why shouldn't these remedies all have maybe very similar, but also maybe very different types of energy waves that we pick up and can remind us of our own originality, personal originality. That's the quality that I'm looking for in a remedy or in a prescription, should I say. Because I often don't just give one remedy. I will give a main remedy and I will support it with supportive remedies for either chakras or miasms or organs that are struggling. So, yes, I'm very eclectic. I'm very plastic. But I want to seek the quality of electrodynamic energy or the light of remedies. Because so often a person comes back better and the first thing they do is they smile. And that's the quality of their light. So I hope it doesn't sound too naff, but it's kind of, that's what I look for. That's why I do this job. I do this job because I want to know what creativity, what purpose a patient has. And it's a reward to find out what they do.
It is a journey, and it's such a wonderful journey to see with the patient, to experience that. And it's life-changing, not just for the patient, but for the practitioner. There's so many stories and examples that we all have and we can share and how patients were on the brink, let's say, or they just couldn't move forward. And all of a sudden, they found their footing. And all you need, sometimes with very gentle souls, you just need a slight nudge almost, you know?
Yeah.
And
don't need a JCB.
Yeah, it's just, you don't. And it's just so wonderful to see just a slight nudge can absolutely transform a person. But you've got to try it. You've got to give homeopathy a chance, try it, and then see that result. And it paints 1,000 words, doesn't it? Writes 1,000 books to witness it yourself and to see a transformation from being, let's say, unwell to being well. I mean, it's just incredible. And all of that, you know, in a little round pill, perhaps, or a bottle of drops or a tablet, which whatever form factor it is, you know?
Yes.
It's just so incredible. And I think we sometimes get, well, or should I say, we are all so absorbed by technology and innovation and advancement that we've forgotten the most basic things. And like you said, you use that word naff, but you know, when I say to people, do you take a walk in the park? And they said, what are you talking about? I said, yes. You need to ground yourself.
Yes.
You need to go back down to that level. Just think of it as an analogy. You know, you've got your ego and you're trying to suppress it so that you become humble. Going to the park will desensitize you to a great many things in your life.
Yeah, understood. You know. Absolutely. Yeah, rewarding.
Absolutely. Colin, we're out of time. And
okay.
It's been absolutely wonderful. The time really has gone by so very quickly indeed. And I've, as I said to you, just off the record before this, the part two of this podcast, which was, firstly, thank you very, very much, of course, for what you do and who you are. But there's a great respect that I certainly have for you because of the way that you think and the way that you practice homeopathy and the reality of the situation. I think it's good to be real. It's good to be tangible. So if I could say to the listeners that, you know, I promote the show as the voice of homeopathy because I want to make homeopathy tangible, Colin would be right at the top of that example of tangibility of homeopathy. And we should be very grateful for your gifts, I think, to the homeopathic community, especially these three volumes, but the latest one, of course, we've spoken about, volume 3, the new Materia Medica. And I do hope certainly next year, I say next year because it's, or should I?
Not that far rephrase off. That,
I'll have to cut that. I have to say that again. I do hope that in a few months, certainly you can come back and we can talk some more because there's so many questions I have for you.
I should be delighted.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And thank you for your kind words. I'm very touched.
And that was the amazing, incredible Colin Griffith, author of not only the New Materia Medica Volume 3, but of course Volumes 1 and 2, and also many other books, which you can find, of course, on all online and offline bookstores. Now, you may not be aware, but Colin was not just a guest on the Homeopathy Health Show for episode 72 and 73, but previously he's been on, in the early days, I have to say, on episode 14. And there Colin talked about his journey to homeopathy and a great many other things as well. So do check that out. It's available on all podcast apps, so Spotify, Apple Music, etc. Or just go to podbean.com and you'll find it there. You'll find it on my website. And of course, you'll also find it on the major platform of UK Health Radio. And that's at ukhealthradio.com. So it's really been such a wonderful conversation with Colin. It makes it so, so interesting. And he has such a wonderful, wonderful way of, getting information across, getting things across. I just loved it. Really, really was so, so good. So I hope you have a wonderful week ahead of you, a productive week. And I look forward very much to speaking to you again next week. Take care and stay safe. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Please do support the show by clicking follow on my socials. Remember, the more exposure the podcast receives, the better for homeopathy around the world. You can find me on Instagram by searching for @like_treatslike, and on both Facebook and TikTok by searching for @like_treatslike. So let's promote the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast around the world together. Don't forget to visit me online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast tab. Here you'll be able to see all the guests that have joined me on the show so far. And of course, you can stream on demand the latest episode to your mobile, tablet, or PC. Until next time, stay safe and take care.